Welcome to the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. I'm your host, James Renford Powell, author of The Laws of Material Wealth, and also host of this show and the Bookman Show on television. Now, a lot of you may be outside of the viewing area for the Bookman Show, but we'd welcome you to go to youtube.com and type in Renford Broadcast Network. And then you can pick up the Bookman Shows, the Core Concepts Lecture Series, and audio books, the Renford Theater. You can view the first DVD of the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program, which will give you some idea of the overall program. I want to welcome you to the show tonight. I want to remind you that if you've got friends that would like to listen to the show, but maybe they're not online or don't have a computer or whatever, they can go to dial on their phone, 347-838-9142. That's 347-838-9142. If you want to ask a question, just press the one button on your touch tone dial and you'll be able to ask a question of my guest this evening, Dr. L. McDonald. Dr. McDonald is doing a six-part series with us. This is the third in the series. She and her business partner developed a program called Stress Ace Yoga, and this is specifically to deal with problems that we hardly knew existed before about 1970. People didn't talk about stress so much. And so she's going to talk about that a little bit and then go into her third part of the series. Also, if you noticed during the show, if you're watching on the Internet, the advertisements come up, go ahead and take a look at them. It helps pay the bills for us as well. So check it out, and check out also the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. On the RBR site, go back and look at some of the shows that have been on there before. If you missed Dr. L's series, then you can go back to that site. That's blogtalkradio.com/Renford, and then go to the archives, and you just scroll back down, and you'll find the second and the first to help make this a more complete and beneficial program for you. As usual, we introduce a new blog every Wednesday night on the show. And this week, it's called The Source of the Success Principles. The Source of the Success Principles. We'll read that, and then we'll get right back to Dr. McDonald. The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace D. Wattles was featured recently in the book The Secret, but was originally published in 1910. Wattles spent his early years considering the laws of success and studying the great philosophers of the world. It is interesting that Napoleon Hill did the same thing later in Think and Grow Rich, but used his source, the great titans of industry in America, the emerging economic giant. The difference between the two would seem to be the sources from which they derived their success philosophies, but the conclusions were almost identical. Both men sought to provide a how-to guide for readers to self-discover the laws of success. Both provided specific steps. Napoleon Hill provided his six-step program, and Wallace Wattles wrote a classic essay called How to Get What You Want, which has been included in later publications of The Science of Getting Rich. Wattles describes a definite science of wealth attraction built on the foundation of one commanding idea, There is a thinking stuff from which all things are made. A thought in this substance produces the thing that is imaged by the thought. I suggest that he does much more than explain the universal law of pure potentiality, which the publisher is describing. Because Wattles derived his philosophy from the famous philosophers of history and not from successful businessmen, as did Napoleon Hill, the quotes actually describe the universal laws more specifically. There are certain laws which govern the process of acquiring riches. Once these laws are learned and obeyed by any man, he will get rich with mathematical certainty. That's a quote from him. Hill recognizes that there are 13 principles, but does not state them in the same manner as spiritual masters over the centuries have stated them. He put everything in the terms he discovered them from the highly successful men he had come in contact with. He refers to these universal principles throughout the book and further defines their nature when he writes, quote, "You can build a fortune through the aid of laws which are immutable, but first you must become familiar with these laws and learn to use them," end of quote. He is saying that these laws are unchangeable principles, fixed laws that everything is based on and relates to. The fact is that it is not so much that we learn to use the laws as it is that we must learn to come into harmony with them. Once we are aware through the process of identification and verification of these laws, we learn to operate within them as we do physical laws like gravity. He states, "The building of a fortune generally involves the application of the entire 13 factors of this philosophy." He's talking about the 13 universal laws. "These principles must be understood. They must be applied with persistence by all who accumulate money." As noted, the success principles did not originate with these famous writers on the process of getting rich. They did not begin with the statements by Jesus, though every time he opened his mouth, as recorded, he was explaining or illustrating one of the 13 universal laws or some aspect of a law. Throughout the Tao Te Ching, Lao Tzu is explaining the laws. And the same is true of the teachings of Buddha and the Vedic writers. The same universal principles are being explained and illustrated with short stories. But where did they get them? What was the source? There are those who claim that they originated with Hermes Trismegistus, the master teacher or teacher of teachers, who is supposed to have lived before or about the time of Abraham in Egypt, where he developed the mystery school to which masters from all over the world came to perfect their understanding. The Hermetic teachings are often referred to as axioms, rudiments of the laws, precepts, and principles. These are mentalism, correspondence, vibration, polarity, rhythm, cause and effect, and gender. These axioms are rudiments, are like the radicals in the Chinese written language. There are 215 radicals from which in excess of 5,000 characters, or Chinese words, are made. You might say that these Hermetic axioms are like the alphabet that makes up our English words. In other words, these axioms can be found in each statement describing or defining a universal law. Though ancient, the Hermetic teachings are not the origin of the universal laws. There are metaphysical writers and speakers who are adopting some of the Hermetic axioms and defining them as universal laws, but this is due to limited understanding. In the Wahu Jing, the unknown teachings of Lao Tzu, it is noted, quote, "The world is full of half-enlightened masters, overly clever, too sensitive to live in the real world. They surround themselves with selfish pleasures and bestow their grandiose teachings upon the unwary, prematurely publicizing themselves, intent upon reaching some spiritual climax. They constantly sacrifice the truth and deviate from the Tao. What they really offer the world is their own confusion." And that is why in this program of study, each one of the 13 universal principles are to be identified and verified by you. No one else. No one else can do it for you. In Proverbs 8:22, which either is derived from even earlier sources or was a downloading from Universal Mind, provides a clear picture of the source of the universal laws, states, quote, "The Lord begot me, the firstborn of his ways, the forerunner of his prodigies of long ago. From of old I was poured forth at the first, before the earth, when there were no depths I was brought forth, when there were no fountains or springs of water, before the mountains were settled into place, before the hills I was brought forth, while as yet the earth and the fields were not made, nor the forest clouds of the world. When he established the heavens, I was there. When he marked out the vault over the face of the deep, when he made firm the skies above, when he fixed fast the foundations of the earth, when he set for the sea its limits, so that the waters should not transgress his command, then was I beside him as his craftsman, and I was his delight day by day, playing before him all the while, playing on the surface of the earth, and I found delight in the sons of men. This is a quote out of a chapter that's specifically dealing with wisdom or knowledge, which this text is saying was the tool of God in the way it describes it. Traditionalists are quick to say that this was talking about Jesus. I maintain that every time Jesus told a story, answered a question, or took any kind of action, he was illustrating and explaining the universal laws. I see correspondence between this verse and the following verse in John 1:1-5. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came to be through him, and without him nothing came to be. What is being said in these quotes is that universal laws are aspects of God and are the laws of creation. To understand them, we must look for these aspects in our lives and can fathom them and God no other way. The universal laws are the source of the success principles. Any explanation of them that leaves any of them out is inadequate and insufficient. The success principles are the application of the laws of creation and are integral to the successful creation of anything. And that is my blog for tonight, March 18th. Now, to my guest, Dr. L. McDonald. She's already delivered two really good programs, and this is the third of the six that are planned. And I want to welcome her to the show and get right on with the program. Welcome to the show, Dr. McDonald.
Thanks, Jim. Thank you. It's nice to be here. Thank you.
I was attending a class that you were conducting not too long ago where you mentioned the fact, and I hadn't really thought about it up until then, that stress was not a common word for describing the illnesses. And now we're beginning to see that they're talking about it being the primary cause of heart attacks and all kinds of. And you mentioned how this came to be used, and I guess how you came to choose it as the name of the form of yoga that you've developed. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, stress. The word stress was only coined in about 1970 by Dr. Hans Seeley, a Swiss psychiatrist. And he defined the word as any organism's inability to adapt to change. And we need a certain amount of stress in our lives to get out of bed in the morning, to get our things done. They did a study at the University of Ohio who... they took about 25-year-olds and removed complete stress out of their lives. All they did was sleep, eat, and go to the bathroom. And they found out that within 6 weeks, they started getting ill. So the conclusion of that study is that we do need a certain amount of stress. We need positive stress. The optimum amount for each individual, for each person is individual. But when we have optimum stress, stress that motivates us, that gives us a good cognitive development, that supports us, then we thrive. If we are under stress, we tend to get ill, we get bored, we get depressed. And if we have too much stress, we don't think clearly, we don't have good memory, our health fails. And the studies now are showing that 80% of our illnesses, or even more now, I think, are caused by too much stress. So So stress in and of itself is not bad. It's not negative. But it's how we handle stress that makes it give us these symptoms like heart disease, like not being able to concentrate, like insomnia, like body aches and pains. So when we get the symptoms, it's the stress is already stored in our nervous system, in our body. And what we want to do is educate people on how to handle stress on a daily basis. The yoga that we have created unwinds the nervous system. It starts with current stress, stress that's bothering us consciously now. And then if you keep practicing it over time, it'll go and start unwinding the older stress, stress maybe that you had in your childhood or from an accident or from some kind of drama or trauma in your life that you didn't cope with very well. And if you keep practicing it, it starts unwinding stress that you've inherited from the ancestors in your DNA and in your genetics. So stress in and of itself is neutral. It's how we handle it. Even in the womb, when the mother is under stress, say she has a poor relationship with her husband, or say her diet is not good, or maybe she has a fall during the pregnancy. All that contributes to stress also in the infant. The other thing is that stress comes in different forms. There's emotional stress, there's mental stress, there's physical stress, there's also environmental stress, like being in chemical warfare, like Agent Orange, like the weather. Those are kind of stresses. And there's also mechanical stress where we fall or we break a bone or we hurt ourselves or we maybe get robbed or our house is broken into. Those are all contribute, and all those things are registered within our nervous system. So whenever we're under stress, there's different kind of negative stress or it's too much stress. There's different kind of hormones that are released in the body, and cortisol is one of them. That's the one that helps us store fat around our bellies. When we get too much stress in those ways, then we get big bellies.
Well, now I know where my stomach got big.
Yeah. So anyway, stress in and of itself is not negative. It is just an event that happens in one form or another, and it's what we do with that event or how we learn to manage it that makes a difference. The talk, the series of talks that I'm giving over the next few months, the title of it was Perspectives on Transformation. And the first week I talked about multiplicity and diversity and oneness and how we all are like an orchestra and we're all playing individual instruments. Someone is playing the drum, someone is playing the oboe, someone is playing the violin. And until we start cooperating and working together, beautiful music cannot be created until the conductor gets our attention and we start flowing together. That's when the oneness starts happening. We create the music of life. We are not the music, but we can create the music of life. And in that flow of multiplicity and diversity and oneness, the next month, I talked about the dynamic body self and how being an individual in that oneness gives us our individual aspects. But a lot of people think of themselves as statues and that we're not flowing. And one of the multiplicity and diversity and oneness is a flowing system. We flow in and out like music. The dynamic body self is to help people get in touch with how they're flowing within that oneness. and how even as we're conceived as an ovum and a sperm, once that conception happens, there is constant movement. There's constant movement and fluidity as that those cells divide and multiply, and in the womb we become different creatures. We look like a little worm, we look like a little fish. We detach from the side of the uterus. We're constantly moving until we get too big, and then we go through the birth canal and we're born. We're constantly moving. All of our cells are replicating. Our bodies are getting new cells all the time, constantly, depending on what kind of cell it is. Our liver cell, we get a new liver every 7 years. We get new skin every few years. We are constantly, constantly moving. And we need to think about our bodies as moving, because if we think about it as static and, oh, this is who I am, this is what's going on with me, whenever we get under stress, we tend to hold on to it. I just spoke at a group, a pulmonary support group in Nashville, and it made me very sad to see these people. They owned their disease. Not that their disease is not real, but they got really comfortable with saying, my oxygen tank, my pulmonary, my COPD, my whatever. And what I'm not invalidating that they've been identified with that and that belongs to that particular diagnosis. But there's also ways that they could look at their lives where that disease is not them. They don't become the disease, and the disease doesn't own them. There's other ways to realize that they're not static, but they're flowing, and that they can improve themselves. So that was something that I struggled with over the weekend after I gave that talk. And so tonight, I'm going to be talking about creating and manifesting, creating from nothing and manifesting in this flow that I'm talking about, in this oneness with this dynamic body self. And I heard your blog and how you opened up the program, and as I was listening, I'm not sure my talk is going to fall into those laws, because it has to do with, it's more of all those people you talk about are men, not that that's bad, but it's just, it's so, it seemed to me so, what's the word, linear in thinking, linear, like A plus B plus C plus D, and I'm not saying that doesn't work, because it can work, and it has worked. And what I would like to introduce is a little bit different concept, in the fact that the manifestation and the creation, I'm not talking about like in The Secret. I'm not talking about like the New Age teachings tell us. But I'm talking about us being the source of creation and allowing it to happen. Us being directly connected to Source and being in the flow, like being in the river, like being in a boat going down the river. And if we were to try to navigate that river going A plus B plus C, we would crash and probably turn over and drown. So this concept that I'm introducing tonight is like being directly connected to Source of cosmic intelligence, so that it flows with us, around us, and through us. And when that, it's not a technique, it's an awareness of the place of creativity that happens in the multiplicity and diversity of oneness. When we realize that we are the flow, and that when we are the flow, spontaneous synchronicities happen, happy accidents happen, and they come to us. And we may, in our lower levels of thinking, and I'm also talking about a new level of brain development with this, but when we're not using our neocortex, when we're not using our higher brain function, and we're working on survival, when we're working on trying to stay afloat, by holding onto this rock or holding onto that rock as we're going down the river, we get pretty bloody, and it can be pretty painful to try to hold on. But when we're in the flow, I'm sure you've all had the experience of when you're driving down the road and hitting all the green lights. When we're in the flow, we don't have to hold on, and the river can be gentle and soft. It doesn't have to be white water rapids all the time where we're trying to stay alive. So the awareness of our own place in the creativity that we have access to might not be our lower mind's idea of, quote-unquote, what it is we want. We don't sit around thinking, I want a new car, I want a new car, I want a new car. But we might get something different than a new car. Maybe something else comes to us, like, maybe we needed, and we weren't even aware that we needed a new friend. And so when things come to us like that, we consider these a state of happy accidents, or when someone comes into your life that helps you along the way, or something that you weren't even aware that you needed. The source is a state of creation in direct communication with source. This creativity is not necessarily being an artist, although it could be. Creativity in creating our own life, a free flow of flowing in and out, through your own actions, and it's mostly through your own awareness. So our dynamic body self is also influenced with this. Our mind, and it's also done through awareness, discernment, and decision making. They tell us, judge ye that ye be not judged. Well, it's not about being right or wrong. It's about being able to, if you decide to scratch your nose, that's a decision. You can't make a decision or make judgments. The highest form of discernment is appreciation. And not that, rather than being good or bad, right or wrong, not this, not that, it's rather more like colors, like there's many variations of colors. Like the Eskimos have a word for snow. They have like 20 words for snow. It's like instead of having a red, you have 12 reds or 20 yellows, way beyond rainbow colors, a fountain of possibilities. So creativity, diversity, and multiplicity within oneness. When we know this, we know that we're opening the ego and our higher intellect to the flow of life. So does that make sense, Jim, at this point?
Yeah, everything... You have such a bent on the way you are presenting things, and yet at the same time it's exactly in line with those universal principles. You're talking about the law of oneness, you're talking about synchronicity, you're talking about the creative process, all of it, and to my mind is straight in. Now, when we talk about Wallace Wattles and some of the others, this particular study was originally talking about success principles, even though they are the universal laws. So the laws of material wealth program began with that slant. But as we completed the 54 weeks, we delved into a much deeper look at what each one of those principles mean. And I don't find anything in what you're saying that's contrary.
Well, good. So I'm glad you said that. So in other words, what I'm saying is with our awareness and our higher intellect, when we start going into this next level of development, spontaneous manifestation happens through our illumined mind, through awareness and intellect, and it's this flow of pure bliss into the mind that judges not right or wrong, but we're able to make discernments in all of life brings the body into the dynamic body. So we realize we're dynamic. We realize we're in the flow of life. And in this flow of life is where true creativity and manifestation happens. We become more spontaneous, more creativity, and we're open to new and more possibilities. We don't have to go from the black or white. There's many, many colors, many, many possibilities that can be included in the flow of life. And we must realize we're not static. We're not a statue. We're in the river. We're not holding on. And we don't need to accumulate because of the flow. Life is flowing around us, with us, and through us. And we become the flow. We become the flow. It's a process of creativity with the oneness of life, with new direct experiences. Differences in integration become the same within the one life. So we begin to experience the body of life or existence as our body, and yet we are individual within this body. So it all becomes fluid, and once it becomes fluid, we begin to appreciate in a way that gets us into this flow even more. And once we're in the flow, we'll find that life around us also becomes in the flow. And the synchronicities begin to happen. We start to have happy accidents where we move more into action to allow these experiences to happen. And we become the experience. It becomes effortless. And the next manifest thing becomes the new thing. Appreciation brings the experience. And then more manifestation. And one of the ways we do this is through giving. Not so much, just money, but giving of ourselves, giving of our time, giving of our love, of our friendship. Whenever we give, we're energized because the flow, it makes more room for the flow to happen. So we become more spontaneous ourselves. People start being attracted to us more. People want to help us. We help others. So the more we give, the more this manifesting and creativity begins to happen for us.
And that even those are falling straight in line with the law of giving and receiving and sharing of our time, our wealth, our knowledge. All of these things are very much in tune with the principles as we've been teaching.
So this high next level of development, we experience life more in a holistic unity. We don't feel so isolated anymore. We start experiencing everything all at once. We become more like awareness. The awareness, I teach my yoga students to open up. Whenever we get under stress, we don't see as well, we don't hear as well, food doesn't taste as good, all our senses begin to shut down. So I teach my yoga students how to open up their senses, like not just open them up, but to learn to become more aware of one thing at a time. For instance, here's an example, and our audience tonight can try this. The mind, our typical lower mind, has a tendency to only be able to focus on one thing at a time. So if I were to say to you, become aware of your breath, and you say, okay, I can do that, and you become aware of your breath. Now, holding the awareness of your breath, become aware of my voice. See if you can hold the awareness of your breath and my voice at the same time. What you'll find, typically, with most people, your mind will flip-flop back and forth between your breath and my voice, your breath and my voice. So let's try it again. It takes practice, but it can be done. When you become a vibrating field of awareness, it's when you're able to go into this next level of development and experience this flow that I'm speaking about. So become aware of your breath. Now open your awareness up to become aware of my voice all at the same time. Become aware of the things that you're seeing as well as hearing, as well as smelling. Become aware of the air on your skin. Open your senses up. Be aware that you're either lying down or sitting up. All of these things come into play all at once. So you're experiencing life in a wholeness, rather this linear A plus B plus C plus D kind of solution. For instance, here's another example. Say you walk into a room. You walk into a room and you experience the room. There it is. But it has a funny feeling about it. You're aware of the people, you're aware of the smells, you're aware of the sounds, you have a good feeling. But there's an inkling little thing that you're not liking. Maybe you're a smoker, maybe you're not a smoker, but maybe there's someone over in the corner smoking. But your mind goes over to that person in the corner smoking rather than taking in the whole room. Does that make sense?
Yes. Are you asking me?
Well, who else am I going to talk to?
I thought you were asking a rhetorical question there. Yeah,
oh, okay. No, I was hoping for a response from you.
Yeah. When you go into...
So anyway, this wholeness is within the multiplicity and diversity. Within the wholeness. But within this wholeness, we're also individuals. We are part of that wholeness of existence. And then when we begin to experience ourselves as a part of that whole, we become part of existence. And once we are aware that we're part of existence, then existence becomes us, and we become existence. Hello?
Are we existing? Are we 50 Shades of Grey?
So who we are as an individual within this wholeness is that we are the center of our own awareness, but of this diversity, and we become unbounded pure awareness. And once we have become unbounded pure awareness, we also join in with the universal awareness. So instead of this conditioned, dumbed-down way that most people live their lives, we become expansive, unbounded awareness, full of ecstatic bliss. And instead of going into like this silent meditation thing that they teach us sometimes, how to quiet the mind, our mind is active. But it's a quiet active. It's an activity that is full of aliveness and potential and creativity and manifestation. And once we become that, then we know that existence is us and we are existence. And then we can join into this higher level of awareness where we become the flow and the flow becomes us. And that's when you realize, you want to use the word God, you can certainly do that, but you can call it universal intelligence, higher intellect. That is outside of us and inside of us. And when we are in that flow, it's when spontaneity, creativity, and manifestation of things that we need in our lives, including people, money, material objects, come into play. And they come spontaneously. Just like they say in the Bible, the Lord God takes care of the lilies of the field and the birds in the air, and they do not have to toil because they are taken care of.
The exercises that one does in Stress Ace Yoga, really, it sounds to me like you're saying that is a form of meditation in itself.
It is meditation, but it's not the kind of meditation they teach you in your traditional ways where you're supposed to become empty and kind of be still, and it's not that kind of meditation. It's a meditation that is an active meditation. And when I say that, it's because we're unwinding our nervous system, we're unwinding our brains, and with that unwinding, the stress leaves our body. So we're taking us back to our original innocence, back where we were born into bliss and ecstatic ecstasy. We were born into that as little babies. And as we grew up, we got conditioned through no fault of anyone's fault, just the way life has been up until now, and so we learned to do it differently. We got dumbed down and conditioned to behave in certain ways, to act in certain ways, speak in certain ways, dress in certain ways, by teachers, parents, society, you name it. So this original innocence that we have originally came into is still in us. It's just been covered up, dampened down by stress, if you want to call it, or by life, or whatever you want to say that word is. But stress-based yoga helps unwind the nervous system where we get back to that original innocence. Back when I opened up the talk and said, current stress starts unwinding, then the older stress starts unwinding, and then you get to the stress of the ancestors, the DNA, the genetic kind of stress that we've accumulated through no fault of our own, just as the way life has been up until this point.
You know, psychiatrists and in a number of different therapies, there's this emphasis on getting out the garbage, going back down and finding those things that are causing the stress and causing the problem. But in the method that you introduce in stress-based yoga, it doesn't seem to be the requirement to dredge up old stuff as much as it is do the work and it will dissipate. Would that be a correct statement?
That is a correct statement. I equate it to when you throw your trash out, when the garbage people come to pick up your trash, if you go out there and look through your trash can and go, oh, look at that candy wrapper. I remember eating that. Oh, look at that banana peel. Oh, that was 3 days ago. We don't do that. We just throw it out. Now, in unwinding our stress, there may be a little bit of discomfort. And the reason is what's gone in has got to come out. And when it comes out, you might re-experience a memory or you might re-experience a body pain or something like that, but it doesn't last very long. It just comes up and out, and then you can't remember it at all. A lot of people, like I was talking about the pulmonary group that I spoke to over the weekend, it scares them on a very deep level, this kind of freedom, because it's like a pair of old shoes that are worn out. They got holes in them. You're used to walking in those shoes. And to be in a new way of living your life can be very scary for some people, even if it's painful. So it's tricky in that sense, in that you want to be comfortable enough to accept the new way of being, and at the same time, you're miserable being the way you were until you get used to the new way the new shoes feel. So stress-based yoga makes all that easy, because when we do the movements, when we do the breath, when we do the sound, all it does is allow the nervous system to relax, to let go of the stuff that's stored in there stress-wise, and to allow yourself to get back to your original innocence as what you have your birthright and what you were born into.
You mentioned earlier, not in this session, but in another session, that you were looking for yoga teachers that would train for stress-based yoga, and they have to be yoga teachers with a certain number of hours or a certain amount of certification, right?
That's right. We're looking to train. This stress-based yoga is an advanced yoga, and so the people that we train need to already be certified in a type of yoga. They need to be a 200-hour certified yoga teacher for us to teach them. Our training is 50 hours. And so they can become certified and licensed after a year to train other teachers. After they've practiced stress-based yoga a year, they can become licensed and certified to train other yoga teachers if that's something that they're interested in doing.
Do you think that this this type of yoga would ever be used by people, clinical psychologists or psychiatrists, as one of your objectives is for this to be used in the mainstream for treatment?
Well, it's interesting you ask that. Stress ACE is a stress management technique. So, Anka Ramsden, my associate in Australia, is a child psychologist. She also works with adults, but she's a child psychologist. So when I was there, and I'd ask her after, 15 years, what you've been doing, and she tells me, well, I took your original work with the eye movements and the sound of the breath, and I've created this thing called Stress ACE. And I said, oh, show me. Let's have a look at it. And she showed me, and I said, well, we do this in yoga. Anyway, it culminated. She said, well, let's create a stress ACE yoga. I said, okay. So that was, I was the yoga part. She was the psychologist part. So she, stress ACE is psychological stress management technique that helps change people's lives. The website is stressace.com, and she trains psychologists how to do stress ACE. My website is stressaceyoga.com, and I train yoga teachers. So this particular yoga goes extremely well with someone that is in therapy, and psychologists can also use this yoga as an adjunct to their regular therapy sessions. So it goes really well hand in hand. I'm teaching it right now at the University of Memphis. I'm teaching it at Focus Healthcare, which is an eating disorder clinic over here in Memphis. And then I have my own practice where I teach, I see people privately, and I also teach yoga classes. So it's very diverse in the kind of population that it can work with. Does that answer
and
your question?
Anka has developed a course. I assume that's for, is it for psychiatrists or is that for the general public, the course that she's developed?
She has several courses.
From her angle.
Yeah, she has several courses going on. She's got a stress ACE for golfers, athletes. She's got a stress ACE for equestrians. They have found that these dressage and jumper horses, and any horse actually, that if they're having trouble with the horse, they can work with the owner or the rider, and the horse starts behaving differently after they've had stress ACE. She also has a training course for psychologists, and she has now started a training course for coaches, life coaches, using stress ACE. So she's got a whole stable full of different ways of using stress ACE.
I can see that being for salesmen and for management and corporations in a wide range.
Absolutely, absolutely. Corporate healthcare, all the EPAs. It would be fabulous for their employees.
I find it a little bit hard to believe that these old hard-working executives, men or women, would be in their yoga tights in practice in the office, but I can see where just from some of the introductory classes that you can teach them so much about just doing a few things from their chair.
That's right. As you know, Sunday when we were at Unity Church, you don't even have to get out of your chair to do a lot of this. So there's ways to go unwind the nervous system without getting in your yoga tights and getting on the floor and doing postures. Absolutely.
Now, let's say that an executive, male or female, is under a great deal of duress and is trying to get hold of the situation. Could you describe for listeners here something they might do that would bring some immediate relief or some assistance to them?
Yes.
I know you can't demonstrate it, but maybe we could describe it.
Yeah. So if you're sitting in a chair, you would just straighten your spine, lower your shoulders away from your ears, place your hands in your lap, and just take some deep breaths from your belly. And when that feels fairly comfortable, you're taking a nice long deep breath. And on the exhale, you're going to turn your head to the right. Your eyes are open. You turn your head to the right on the exhale. And turn your head back to center. Inhale. And then exhale, turn your head to the left. Turn your head back to center. Inhale. And then exhale to the right. And you just keep this movement going for a while. And then close your eyes and keep the movement going. This is a simple little movement. Let's the back brain, your lower survival fight, flight, or freeze brain, lets it know that it's safe. And once that brain knows that it's safe, then you can get some cognitive functioning going on in your higher brain where you get more clarity about the problem. As long as you're working and the fight, flight, or freeze brain, your reptilian brain or animal brain is functioning, it's really difficult to get any kind of clarity. So you just breathe to the end, to the center and exhale to the sides. You do it with your eyes closed and you do it with your eyes open. Just that simple little movement will help your nervous system calm down to a point where you can get some clarity.
Now, you explained that there's a rudimentary reason for that, where that came from. Can you tell us that?
You mean the movement?
Yeah, that particular
the
one
movement.
About turning
yeah,
the head to back, the right and left.
Yeah, back in the days when we were still hunters and gatherers, when we were in the savannah, in the, like the Serengeti or something like that, whenever we were scanning the countryside, looking around with our heads back and forth, we knew we were safe. We could see all around us. You know, we could see to the front, we could see to the back. We knew at that point we're not in danger. So that is a reminiscent of that kind of movement that allows that back brain to relax, to let us know that we're safe.
Now, what do you call that? It's not exactly genetic, but it's kind of a race consciousness. How would you define that?
What, the memory of that, me?
Yeah, that is that like
It's a body memory. It's an ancestral body memory. It's just a memory that when we're moving our heads like that, we're talking to our body. Our body has an intelligence of its own. It knows how to heal itself. Its job is to stay alive. If we cut ourselves, it knows how to heal. If we break a bone, we might need to go get it set, but it knows how to mend those bones. Given the right circumstances, the body always tries to get back into homeostasis, which is balance. It means balance. If it gets out of whack, either chemically or through trauma, or stress, it will do its best to get us back into homeostasis. The problem is that when stress comes in and it gets overwhelmed, it will go into shutdown mode, or it will try to stay alive as best it can without the circumstances being such where it can take us back to its health. So it might need a little outside help sometime, because it can get overwhelmed, especially if we push ourselves through stress. Like if we get a cold and we don't allow ourselves to rest and relax and we push ourselves through it, it can actually cause more harm to the body than help it. Colds are typically, you know, stress-related anyway. So that's kind of what that's about.
Now, you mentioned that there's a wide variety of sources for this stress. It may be mental, it may be health or physical. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, our environment has a lot to do with it. We just got through a huge, here in Memphis, a cold, big cold spell where it was stressful on everyone driving, and it was hard to get warm, and then the stress of all the utility bills going up when you have to turn your heat up, and so all that's stressful. And then there's mechanical stress where, like, if you have an accident, like if you, you know, have a car accident. A friend of mine just recently had a car accident. So, you know, the car accident was one stress, and then when he hit the steering wheel from the car accident, it hurt his body. So he had mechanical stress, he had environmental stress, he had emotional stress because it scared him. And I know the my students at school, at the university, they're under stress with their grades and trying to, you know, do well and keep things going in their lives. Some of them are mothers, fathers, students, and they're trying to work as well. So those are all heavy kind of stressors, and it's very difficult to maintain a healthy lifestyle when you're pushing, when we're put under those kind of stresses and pushing ourselves.
And
like
it's, it is very difficult in the corporate world where you have the stress from an upset client or somebody who's not satisfied, or from a manager or something you're dealing with who doesn't really know how to deal with people. They're all of these kind of things. It are ways that you can use stress as yoga to compensate and to deal with it.
That's right.
Where do you
not
go from here?
Not so much, but to be able to get yourself in a place where stress is not harming you.
Pretty hard to do if you've got a job, if your job and your livelihood depends on a particular set of circumstances. Sometimes they always talk about how stressful air traffic controller jobs are, and there are many jobs like that.
Yeah.
We have a very short amount of time. I want to thank you, Elle, for being with us tonight. You feel like you've covered your third section well?
I think so. I think I've covered it pretty well. I just like to reiterate about the flow and being able to be in the flow and allow that to happen will make life a lot easier. Knowing
so we've
that
we've only
those
got
benefits.
About. We've only got about 60 seconds, but what's on for next week, for your next month's course?
I believe number 4 is a new way of living, I think.
Okay, well, great. Great. A new way of living. Thank you very much, Elle, for being with us, and thank all of you for being with us tonight on the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. Have a good evening.